Thank you, Jake and band. It's great music. See, you clapping. It's a good grand. We all get to clap. It's great. They do clap well, I think. You're absolutely right, Corey. We're working our way through the Book of Ruth this summer, and I've been urging you to read it and think about it and read it imaginatively. Enter into the story, walk alongside the people and through the events of this book. I think because it's such a beautiful story, it really repays that kind of attention. And today we're going to come to the moment that is a connecting of a man and a woman in a way that they didn't expect. There's so much of this book has in it, the hidden work of God, where he is active behind the scenes, where he's doing what we don't discover till later, where we see him sort of after the fact, and that's characteristic of the book, and that will be the case today as this relationship, this friendship at least starts between Ruth and Boaz. And I was put in mind of the first man and first woman, turning back to Genesis, when God put announced that it wasn't good for the man to be alone and put him to sleep in order to give him the gift of a relationship that would deal with his loneliness, that would an intimate relationship. That gift was given, but it was required that Adam be asleep in order to receive it. And I think we'll see something of that pattern in this story, and we see it over and over again historically, probably in your own life, that when we think we're part of the action, when we have something to contribute, when we know what's best for us and petition God for it, we tend to get it wrong. I heard somebody talk about the story of Adam, of the woman's creation, and in his imagination, this Bible teacher was saying, what would it have been like if Adam was awake and could contribute his insights as God is fashioning the woman? It's sort of like in this guy's telling, buying a car, and you know, what features do you want on the car? And all the latest whatever, and it would be terrible. Adam didn't know what he needed. He didn't know, he couldn't create himself to receive a good gift. He didn't know how to find a good gift of that sort, and so God acts for the man without his contribution. He's unaware. The gift is given later, the Lord having done all the work, preparing the man, fashioning the woman, giving them to each other to their surprise. And we'll see that in this story as well. Let me remind us kind of the context. The first chapter ends with verse 22. We'll look back at that and sort of reconnect with the story and then take up chapter 2 today. 1:22. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. So we saw at the end of our message last week, our study last week, that Naomi, after 10 years in Moab because of poverty, is ready to return home. And Ruth, of the two daughters-in-law, all the women in chapter 1 are widowed. The two daughters-in-law, one of them agrees to go with her, in fact, determines to go with her. And so Ruth and Naomi travel together. They've returned to the land of God's people, the town of Bethlehem, where Elimelech's hometown was. And Naomi, as we might recall, was mostly, she described herself as empty and claimed bitterness for her identity, and there's an undercurrent of despair about her. It's very hard for her to imagine anything good coming next. Ruth, on the other hand, has almost no expectation of what can or will happen next. I don't think we can imagine her visualizing anything that is about to happen to her. She doesn't know what's going to happen to her. But she's heard some very beautiful music that has to do with the God of Naomi and Naomi's family. A God who is good and not capricious and cruel. And that's all. She doesn't know the lyrics to the song yet, but she's heard the music, and she's headed towards it, wondering what will happen, not despairing as her mother-in-law was. So that's their condition, roughly. We can identify some more about the circumstances. The family of Elimelech, Naomi's husband, has no male heir. And the law provided that if such a thing were to happen and there was a widow who was left who might bear children, some member of the family should marry the widow, have a child, and the name of the deceased family line would be thereby preserved. That responsibility is hanging out there. There's nobody left of the Elimelech clan. And the name will be snuffed out in among the people of God unless something maybe like that happens, marrying a widow. But Naomi's too old, probably, to have more children, and Ruth is not an Israelite. And we wonder, you know, is there a way for this family to be preserved? That question is sort of in the air. The other thing that should happen is that when a family has to sell its land, the promised land that God gave to the children of Israel when they entered and conquered the land, and it was apportioned to tribes, and tribes to clans, and clans to families. Each family was given a part of the promised land, and it should not pass out of that family's control. It's a travesty. If some of the promised land is lost to the plan of God, a terrible thing has happened. And once again, the law provided, if and when someone has to sell the land, they're part of the promised land, another family member should step in and redeem it. A kinsman redeemer should buy the encumbered property back and so that the original family can retain it. Now, both those problems are at stake here. The family of Elimelech, in their poverty, had sold the land. They abandoned it. They've gone for 10 years. They come back. They no longer have the control of their own property. Someone else does. And there is no male heir. And all of these questions for the thoughtful reader are in play when these two women return to their hometown. In addition, we've already said it was the time of the judges when all of this occurs, which is a lawless and cruel period of Israel's history. And lawless and cruel times are worse for poor people always. And so these women are facing those conditions as they've now returned to the place that Naomi had left 10 years ago under dire straits, under famine circumstances. So let's go back into the story with chapter 2, verse 1. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And Naomi said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. Now, this story opens with reference to a man, Elimelech. Verse 1 of chapter 1 tells us that he exists, but he fairly quickly dies, as do his sons. Chapter 2 also begins with reference to a man, this man Boaz, and he is going to, by contrast, become an integral part of this story, a very important figure in the plan of God, a forebear to David the king and finally to Christ himself. This man is not going to fade from view as Elimelech did. And we're told something, a few things about him by way of introduction. The American Standard, which I've just been reading, says that he was a worthy man. I think that could be translated with a bit more intensity. Another English translation has it stating that he was a prominent man of noble character. He was a man who was worthy by nature. He was a righteous man. He was a prominent man. He was both had net worth that was noticeable and personal worthiness that was also noticeable. And he's a good man. He's someone we're going to like knowing. In addition, we're told he was of the clan of Elimelech. And now the thoughtful reader's ears are perked up because the question of the kinsman redeemer and the property, the question of the heir to Elimelech's family, that a son being born to a widow, those are, by noting that he is a relative, we have those questions before us. A second thing I'm going to surmise about Boaz, and this is conjecture, the text doesn't say it, but I think it's reasonable conjecture, is that Boaz is a widower. We know in chapter 3 that he's an older man. He says that of himself. And there is no hint anywhere in this book ever that Boaz is concerned about his own heirs, about children that would inherit his property. He is not concerned at all about his own property and its future. He seems to be, that question never comes up. And in fact, in chapter 4, when he's dealing with another man who might also marry this widow, the other man bails out because it would put his property at risk or his family at risk. And Boaz never seems concerned about that. And I think the best way to imagine that, or reason that he wasn't concerned, is that he had been married. He did have his own sons, his own children, who would take care of his property, that all provision has been made for the future of his line and his fields. But he's alone. He's once married, now widowed, an older man. And that's probably how we should see him. Lastly, I think we can look at Ruth's decision to glean. Not lastly from this paragraph, we can look at Ruth's decision to glean. It was the way that poor people could survive. Once again, this comes from the law. This comes from Israel's law, that poor people were allowed to go after those who, some workers had reaped a field, because inevitably some things would be dropped. They're allowed to pick up what was dropped. The fields were required to not, to have a border left around them with a few standing stalks of whatever was being harvested, so that the poor people could find their way there and get a meager amount to survive on. Ruth takes up the opportunity to glean. I read Naomi's comment to her as a bit of, in line with Naomi's discouragement. Ruth suggests she go glean, and Naomi says, go. Go, my daughter. Later, when gleaning is in view again, Naomi gives instructions. She helps Ruth understand the process, what to do and not do, but there's none of that early on. I don't think Naomi has much expectation that any poor people, her and her daughter-in-law, are going to get any good out of any choices anybody makes. And then there's my favorite line in here. It says, Ruth sets out to glean, and she happened upon the field that belongs to Boaz. In fact, it's actually a bit more intensified in Hebrew. It says, her chance chanced upon the field belonging to Boaz. Never intended anything. She came to a fork in the road. She turned right instead of left for no good reason. She ended up in this particular field. And as we read the story, we're watching her stand there, realize that the chance was actually God's direction, and we're wondering what's going to happen next. When I was a freshman in high school, the idea of happenstance among those who love God is something to give some thought to. So many things that seem arbitrary or undetermined or happening for whatever reason, from our perspective, have in the presence and the plan and the hand of God in them. I remember when I was a freshman in high school, I went for absolutely no good reason, on a lark, on a whim, to a Billy Graham crusade in the ironically named Sun Devil Stadium in Tempe, Arizona. And just for no good reason, showed up there one night, and events began that changed everything about my life ever afterwards. I had no idea. When I graduated from college, had a chance to go off to seminary, applied and was accepted at seminary, had a chance to be an intern at PBC, and it was kind of a coin flip. I mean, both, I wanted to pursue ministry, but either seemed like a good idea, and for almost no good reason, I said, well, I'll try the PBC option. 42 years later, you know, they haven't been able to get rid of me despite all efforts, it seemed like an arbitrary decision. It was not happenstance at all. It had the hand of God in it, from my perspective. Leslie and I kind of stayed friends throughout our college years just by accident, being able to run into each other occasionally at other friends' house or in various settings here and there without intending that anything was happening, and yet those had the Lord directing us, those occasions had the Lord directing us in them. So Ruth, her chance chanced upon the field of Boaz, and she's standing there, and our interest is called, why is she there? Why now? What's about to happen? Verse 4. And behold, this is another marker word. It gets translated, again, various ways, but we're supposed to look at something. Now, we see Ruth over there. Now look at this. Here comes a guy. Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came and she has continued from morning, early morning until now, except for a short rest." So we know as readers of this story that these two folks are marked out. The woman standing in the field, not under attractive circumstances at all. She would have been dusty and sweaty and bedraggled and earnest in her work with only a short rest. And here comes Boaz, and he's marked out for us, and we're looking at him. What they don't know, as we as readers know, we're kind of interested. Something's going to happen, but they don't know that. This is an absolutely ordinary day. Each of them doing what they would do for reasons that had nothing to do with the other person, no expectation, and it's as if they've been asleep, as Adam was. Put to sleep, not contributing, not voting on the future, not arranging things, not forcing things into place, being who God allowed them to be, and he brings them at the right time in the right way and to a beautiful outcome, brings them together, gives them to each other, we suspect, although we haven't quite seen it all yet. But that's, as readers, we know more is going on than they know at this point in time. There's a sort of swelling of the strings being played. If this were a movie, the movie score, there's kind of cool music going on in the background. Something's going on here. Jesus said, if you have eyes to see, pay attention. And we're allowed in that way, I think, at this point, to see some things that are about to happen. So what else might we observe? Boaz has showed up. And he has this conversation with his foreman, the foreman, the guy who's in charge of his reapers, his workers. And he says, "May the Lord bless you." And the man answers back, "May the Lord bless you." Now, this sounds almost like it's a greeting. "Hey, how you doing? Good morning. How's it going?" Boaz is a good boss. He thinks about people before profits, and he's a good man at work, and we might be inspired to be good at work, and that would be great. But there's clearly more going on here than that. This statement about blessing is telling us something about Boaz. That he had as his beginning of the day orientation on life. "Lord, how can I be your servant in the lives of other people? Not I have my own anxieties and my own appetites and my own needs and my own desperations and my own celebrations of myself, my own longing. I've got all this package of me going on." He was not that kind of person. The recorded statement, "May God bless you," is given to us to tell us something about these folks. And the young man who's being discipled by Boaz has the same kind of instinct. What might God do using us, using me, to bring about blessing if I could see it, if I had eyes to see, if I was aware? It's almost a commentary on Paul's statement in Philippians. Calling us to be like Christ, he says, "In humility, consider others more important than yourselves." A take on life where I'm here for someone else, and not just to be a nice person, I'm here to be God's servant in the life of another. How might that turn out? As a result, he sees the new gleaner. He might have not seen her at all if all he was concerned about was his stuff, but he's concerned about other people, and as a result, he sees there's a new person gleaning. And this comes, we'll see in a minute, it comes as a big shock to Ruth. She never expected anybody to notice her. "Why would anybody notice me? I have absolutely no status. I am poor. I am I'm foreign, I'm useless, I'm just trying to survive. Why would anybody take notice of me? And yet, the first thing we hear about Boaz is that he notices her. And in fact, his servant, who's becoming like the master, becoming like Boaz, also noticed her. And he noticed how hard she worked and what kind of person she was. The fact that someone new or something new is in the on the scene. Yesterday she wasn't here. Yesterday I came out. I've talked to my workers. We harvested however much we'd harvested that. But now today she's here. She wasn't here before, and he notices her. It could be, and I think for many of us, new things come with a little bit of, wait a minute, I'm not sure this is good or bad yet. Maybe I should be fearful. Maybe I should be concerned. Poor people are a problem anyway. Gleaners tend to get in the way, and when they don't get in the way, maybe they're going to steal stuff, and there tends to be assaults and problems, and they gum up the works. However many gleaners there are, we wish there were fewer of them, because that's what you think about poor and needy people in the midst of productive other people. And you could look at the new person and say, is she going to cause trouble? Is she going to get in the way? What difficulties might this portend? But Boaz doesn't do any of that. His instinct is to be a helper. He doesn't know much yet about her, but his instinct is to help. We're living in a new neighborhood as of a few weeks ago, and been watching our dog. We have a small dog, an old dog, great dog. But she's been confused. We put her in a new place, and so the question is this a good or a bad deal? New things may be a problem. New things may be a blessing. And she, the smells are different, the walks are different, the other dogs that come by our house are different. Who should she bark at? Who should she not bark at? She doesn't know. We put her in a new world, and there's a kind of a fearfulness, I think probably because of her age, among other things, that new things are a little bit, I'm not sure about, a little, hold back. And I think many of us are like that, that instead of seeing the person that wasn't there before as potentially an individual that I could serve God in their life or do something for or embrace with good intention, we tend to be like, I don't know. I don't know at this point. I'll be cautious around them. So Boaz saw someone, the way his life was oriented is that opportunities come when God gives them, and what will he use me to do? How can I be a blessing? Take up this story again in verse 8. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping, and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Now, at this point, he's only offering, not only, but he's offering, I think, something like kindness that is impressive, but it's not remarkable yet. A cup of cold water for a thirsty person. I'm going to arrange that you not get assaulted. You can carry on your life, providing for the being God's provision for the poor in an ordinary way. He might have done this very thing for other gleaners, as far as we know, being the kind of man that he was. Verse 10. Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me. How you left your father and mother, your native land, and came to a people you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant." That phrase should better be translated, "You have spoken to the heart of your servant, though I am not one of your servants. I'm unworthy of what you've done for me." And this is This statement by Ruth to Boaz, I think, opens up something in Boaz that he didn't expect. He is able to tell her that he has already heard her story. He didn't know it was her. Now, he didn't know this was the Moab. But once it's identified that she's the young Moabite, I know the backstory. I know that you came here because of you're a widow. You came with your mother-in-law. I know that I know something of your story. But what he does, and we talked about this last week, what he does is interpret her story for her. It's not just that this is the better of two options. It's not even just that you love Naomi, though that's clearly part of it, and you love the family of Naomi, that's clearly part of it. You have come seeking the God of Naomi. Your God shall be my God. That's Ruth's language from chapter 1. And Boaz says even more. You're coming to seek refuge under the wings of God. Not God at a distance even, but God who draws near. What's going on inside you is a longing. You've heard this beautiful music. There's a longing for a living God who cares for people, who is aware of needs, who enfolds folks as a hen does under a wing, draws them near to his heart and protects. You're looking for more than just the minimum. You've come seeking something else. And Ruth recognizes that's exactly what is true of her. But no one could articulate it before. No one ever told her that what she felt and hoped for and wished and glimpsed at a distance and kind of knew about, this was what she was hoping for. Is there a God who combines love with authority? Is there a God who might welcome an outsider? You're seeking refuge under his wings. And so she, in a very forthright statement, says not, hey, thanks a lot, or that's great. She says, you've gone really deep. You've spoken to the heart of this of your servant. And Boaz, as we imagine him, is a widower. He's alone. He's got a grown family. He's looking for ways to serve God in life, to make a difference. He realizes that what she's reflecting back to him is what he'd hoped for. That I could be good to someone for God's sake. That I could not just give a cup of cold water to a needy person, but say the things that will draw her near to God. And there's almost nothing Ruth could have said to Boaz that it would have meant more to him. And I think that's when it began to stir in him. I've wanted to find somebody I can be a blessing to, of this sort, at this depth. Someone who will let me use language that goes to the heart. Someone that will appreciate me for those things. And all of a sudden, I think, Boaz realized he's not just in a paternalistic relationship with a young woman. This is somebody who he's connecting with in a way that suggests that God has given them to each other as he gave Adam and Eve to one another. That Boaz has been waiting patiently, not angling for anything. Neither one of them thought this would happen. This is exactly the wrong circumstance to meet your beloved out in the field with a bunch of other people around. And yet he's sensing, because he is able, by God's grace and her willingness to speak to her heart, and she tells him about it, that a bridge has been built, something important and profound has happened between them. I'm not going to read the next bit of the story just for time's sake, but you can tell Boaz changes. He wanted to be an ordinary water-giving, protection-offering kind of guy first. Once she speaks these things to him and he senses what's going on, he starts giving. It says that he fed her, not just, you can take what's left and you'll be fine, but he tells his workers, pull a bunch of stalks out and throw them down at her feet so she can, glean. There's extra stuff to glean. There's food for everybody to eat. And Boaz feeds her with his own hands. Comes and makes, you get enough? Here's a little more. Here's a little extra food. Takes them home to Naomi. She's piled up with food and she's leaving. She's being taken care of in a way that there's something has changed in this man. And again, it's her response to the Lord, and it's his ability to be part of that seems to have made all the difference to him. It's not particularly romantic at this point. It's not starry eyes. It's it's kind of a God thing that they're sharing. And so he adds more to her life, gives her more, cares, provides for her in a more profound way. And at the end of the day, she goes home to her mother-in-law. Pick up the story in verse 19. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "This man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." Now, Naomi at one point is frustrated with God. Here she's invoking blessing on someone. And yet it's different a bit than the way Ruth and Boaz spoke to each other, because she's got a bit of a calculation in this. He's a redeemer of ours. There's a potential future here. She's longing for blessing because she's a good woman. She has a good heart. But in addition, she can see a possibility. Because he's one of our redeemers, may he be blessed. Verse 21. And Ruth the Moabite said, "Besides, he said to me, 'You shall keep close to my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Now we're going to end the story at another cliffhanger moment. What's going to happen now? As he did with the first man and first woman, God arranged, to their surprise, to put a man and a woman together. And each of them offers the other something that they hoped for. Boaz being able to speak to someone who receives his good intentions at a God level, not just at a surface level. Ruth saying aloud, "I don't deserve any of this. I don't deserve your interest in me, and yet you are, and you're interested in me not for the wrong reasons, but for the right reasons." And this sense that something's going on, and it has to do, and the Lord's at the center of it, and Naomi's calculating future possibilities, and we want to know what's going to happen next. We'll have to wait for next week to find out. It becomes more tender, more romantic, a bit, you know, as this unfolds. But right now, it's just a sense of the Lord has given us to each other. But I think just for our sake, as we sort of step away from this text this morning, you know, we might wonder how often we start with ourselves. How often our world is, what are my needs? What are my fears? What are my, you know, what do I long for myself? What, how many likes do I have? How many, you know, people are reading my stuff? How many are aware of me? We start with ourselves, and it's much harder for God to give gifts to people who are holding on to something else. When our hands are open, when our starting point is, "Lord, if you would use me today to see what I wouldn't see otherwise, to speak a word of your mercy and grace to another, if you would let me be a blessing, I would be so grateful." And then to have that chance, develop a relationship. There's, you know, I think the idea that we will either let God give us a gift or we will grasp for ourselves and run life as seems best to us is kind of at the heart of this. Ruth chanced onto a field because she was trying to do good for her mother-in-law and herself. She was trying to answer what God, you know, go where God had called her to. And this great gift is given. So let's sort of ask ourselves that question as a way of concluding the morning. And then we'll figure out what comes next as we take it up again next week. Let's pray. Lord, I want to confess that it's much harder for me to offer myself in service to others for your name's sake than it is to expect something from them. And I thank you for Boaz's orientation as one who offers blessing, and Ruth as one who is listening with an open heart. Help us be like these, Lord, and Let us let you be good to us, we pray. In Jesus' name.